Hello, and welcome to The Top Story, a podcast with headlines of the day from our correspondents around the world. I'm Tianyu. Coming up in this edition, Hamas is demanding a complete withdrawal of Israeli troops from Gaza and ramped up humanitarian aid to pave the way for a ceasefire agreement. Heavy blizzards across western U.S. are taking a toll on the lives of millions of Americans. And senior doctors in South Korea have joined their junior colleagues in their strikes in a show of support. We begin with the Middle East. A Hamas delegation is joining Qatari and U.S. mediators for negotiations for a ceasefire deal with Israel. The group is demanding a complete withdrawal of Israeli troops from Gaza and ramped up humanitarian aid in order to pave the way towards an agreement. Associated Press correspondent David Biller reports from Jerusalem.
Israel had been expected to go to Cairo and join these talks, but did not send a representative, and we're told that is because Hamas did not meet its precondition from Israel, which was to answer two questions. Prime Minister Netanyahu asked for a list of the remaining hostages who are alive in Gaza, and Israeli media have reported that the other question is how many Palestinian prisoners Israel would need to free for each hostage. Their talks in Cairo follow negotiations in Doha that Israel did join, and Paris. We haven't had signs of real concrete advance since then. The deal they were discussing at that point was the release of up to 40 hostages for around 300 Palestinian prisoners, as well as a six-week ceasefire, during which time the hundreds of aid trucks that are needed to flow into Gaza each day could resume. There's been intense pressure internationally for a ceasefire, particularly since the Thursday morning incident involving a truck or trucks that were swarmed by desperate Palestinians. Israeli soldiers opened fire, and more than 100 people were killed. That prompted the U.S. to begin conducting aid drops. Just because Israel is not joining these talks in Cairo doesn't mean there won't be a deal. We've heard from a U.S. official that Israel has basically signed on to the deal that's on the table, and the ball is now in Hamas's court.
That was David Biller with the Associated Press. Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan is pushing for peace during the final day of his annual diplomacy forum in Antalya, hoping for a ceasefire in Gaza and possible talks to end the conflict in Ukraine. Mihal Bardovic reports from Istanbul.
The final day of the Antalya diplomacy forum covered a wide range of issues: women in diplomacy, climate change, and education. But across the 3 days, the central issues shaping discussions were the conflict in Gaza and Ukraine. Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan's opening remarks underscored Ankara's overall stance on Gaza, criticizing the international community's inaction. However, there remains some optimism among diplomats for a ceasefire before Ramadan on March 10. In his closing speech, Turkish Foreign Minister Hakan Fidan stressed the importance of collective action to address what he said were double standards and international law violations, calling for urgent aid to be sent into Gaza. Fidan's appeal coincided with the U.S.'s first humanitarian aid airdrop carried out by three military planes. Fidan also expressed some hope that talks of a ceasefire in Ukraine could begin soon. But a leaked audio recording of German officials discussing weapons for Ukraine caused a stir on Saturday. Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov, who attended the forum in Antalya, stated that the recording published by Russian media exposed what he called the cunning plans of German forces. The recording has triggered concerns of espionage in Germany and is being investigated.
That was Mihal Bardovic reporting from Istanbul. Turning to North America, heavy blizzards across three U.S. states are taking a toll on millions of Americans. Schools and businesses are closed as whiteout conditions make travel impossible across much of the region. Eddie Stiansen has more.
It's by far the most powerful blizzard of this winter season to hit this region, with heavy gusts of wind reaching up to 190 miles per hour. That's over 300 kilometers per hour. And the storm is expected to bring up to 12 feet of snow, more than 3.5 meters, in the highest elevations of California's mountain range. Forecasts predict this might result in one of the top 10 snowiest days of the Central Sierra since 1970. The National Weather Services had warned that whiteout conditions would make travel impossible. And as a result, schools and many businesses in the region remained closed, along with several attractions, including the Yosemite National Park and a long list of ski resorts. Throughout Saturday, some major highways were forced to close down following a number of spin-outs and collisions. And more than 12,000 homes and businesses were still without power in California early Sunday. That's down from nearly 40,000 earlier in the morning. Heavy snowfall and road closures have left some communities cut off, with some local officials urging people to stay where they are unless there's an emergency and warning that it could take some time for snow plows to regain access to remote areas.
That was Eddie Stiansen reporting on the heavy blizzards that hit western U.S. To Asia, doctors with seniority in South Korea have joined their junior colleagues in their strikes in a show of support. Trainee doctors have been protesting for nearly 2 weeks against a government quota plan to admit more medical school students. The actions have lasted beyond a government deadline to return to their jobs last Thursday. Martin Lo spoke with a few of the doctors rallying in Seoul.
The organizers asked for a big show of support, and it looks like they've got it. It's hard to tell exactly how many are here, but it's clearly in the thousands. Senior doctors and other members of the South Korean Health Service are here to show their support for the junior doctors who've now been taking action for about a fortnight. One thing is clear, there's plenty of support on this side. At the same time, the government is stepping up its action against the junior doctors. It's already started legal proceedings against 13 junior doctors, which it says will result in them losing their licenses to practice medicine unless something is settled soon. But certainly the doctors here are 100%, it seems, in their support for their junior colleagues.
Junior doctors are reasonable people, but they don't want to work in a country where their voices are not heard. The government has the key to solve this. The government's claims about a shortage of doctors are groundless. We're protesting today because we believe expansion under current conditions could lead to a financial burden and a collapse of an already deteriorating healthcare system.
So far, most of the public support here has been on the side of the government. People seem to be worried about the thought of doctors taking action. But events like this, the doctors hope, will help to put across their point of view and their claim that this is a fight not just for the junior doctors themselves, but for the future of the entire South Korean health service.
That was Martin Lowy on the doctors' strike in South Korea. In China, the country's political advisory body is convening in the capital, Beijing. President Xi Jinping and other leaders attended the opening of the meeting of the CPPCC National Committee. China's top legislature is set to convene its annual session on Tuesday. The second session of the 14th National People's Congress will last until next Monday. Spokesperson Lo Qingjian says the NPC will continue to support the country's high-quality development. Ahead of the opening of its annual session, the NPC held a press conference addressing questions on the agenda and work of the top legislative body. Da Kaiyi tells us more.
The spokesperson announced that the second session of the 14th NPC will start on March 5th and conclude on March 11th, lasting 7 days. The agenda includes deliberating upon the government's work report and reviewing the progress on the implementation and draft plan for national economic and social development. Reports on central and local budgets will also be studied.
This year marks the 75th anniversary of the founding of the People's Republic of China. It is a crucial year for achieving the goals of the 14th Five-Year Plan and also the 70th anniversary of the establishment of the National People's Congress. The upcoming second session of the 14th NPC session is a significant event in the country's political life this year.
The spokesperson says the MPC system has weathered storms over the past 70 years and witnessed rainbows, providing vital institutional support for achievements in both rapid economic development and long-term social stability.
The central task of the 14th National People's Congress and its Standing Committee is to fully implement the principles outlined in the 19th National Congress of the Communist Party of China. This involves providing legal support for comprehensive national development and the Chinese version of modernization and rejuvenation.
During this year's session, there will be three concurrent press conferences inviting senior officials from relevant departments of the State Council to address questions on diplomacy, economy, and more.
That was Da Kai Yi reporting from Beijing. Finally, to Africa. Somali security forces say they have captured 10 al-Shabaab fighters and neutralized about 30 others during military operations in the lower Juba region. Mohamed Kahiye has the latest from Mogadishu.
Somalia's Ministry of Defense says 30 al-Shabaab fighters were killed while 10 others were captured following operations by special forces in Bersenguni in lower Juba region. According to officials from 43rd Division of the Somali National Army, this operation is meant to flush out al-Shabaab from remaining areas under their control. The Somali military says the operation disrupted enemy supply lines, confiscated weapons, and removed landmines, further advancing the National Army's ongoing offensive against the fighters. Somali security forces have been involved in operations against al-Shabaab on multiple fronts across the country during the past few months. The ongoing first phase of the military offensive declared by President Hassan Sheikh Mahmoud a year ago has seen swathes of land mainly in Hirshabelle and Galmudug states recaptured from al-Shabaab by the Somali National Army. The second phase of the operations is expected to target the group's stronghold in southwest and Jubaland states. According to a UN Security Council resolutions, ATMIS peacekeepers are scheduled to exit the country by end of this year, while transferring full security responsibilities to Somali armed forces. There are concerns, but the Somali government is confident local forces will maintain security even after the exit of AU troops.
That was Mohamed Kahiye reporting from Mogadishu. Top army commanders from the Southern African Regional Bloc have visited the conflicted eastern parts of the Democratic Republic of the Congo, where the armed rebel group M23 is advancing against Congolese government troops. This is the first coordination meeting of the senior officers since the deployment of Southern African Development Community troops in northern Kivu. Sharon Baranga has more.
Under the heavy escort and cover of Congolese army armored vehicles, top military officers from the Southern African Regional Bloc began their fact-finding tour of Eastern DRC. They were on a mission to see how best their troops could help restore security in the restive region where millions have been displaced by insecurity. Chiefs of defense staff of SADC member countries then held a high-level meeting to assess the situation as fighting between M23 rebels and the Congolese army intensifies.
It was a question of assessing the progress of operations on the ground and fine-tuning strategies for strengthening military operations. The chiefs of staff of SADC and the chief of staff of the DRC went to Mobambiro in the town of Sake in Masisi territory. Their visit to Goma is a strong signal of the commitment and determination of SADC and Burundi alongside the DRC.
The 16-member SADC regional bloc approved the Eastern Congo mission in May last year to help the DRC restore security. An M23 offensive in the region has forced many Congolese to flee their homes. Most of them live in makeshift camps in difficult conditions, and the humanitarian crisis in the region is worsening. But some residents of Goma City are still not convinced that foreign peacekeeping missions are the solution.
We remain skeptical because we know that the future of the Congo in terms of security issues can only come from the internal strategies given by the FARDC, the armed forces of the Democratic Republic of Congo, and not by the SADC countries.
On Friday, as the delegation was traveling to the Sake area, M23 rebels threw 5 bombs into the area, visited by the generals, killing and wounding several people. And in another incident, two South African soldiers died and several others were injured in another M23 attack mid last month. This week, United Nations peacekeepers handed over their first military base to security officers in eastern Congo as the UN troops began their withdrawal after decades of operating in the country. Aid organizations fear there will be a new humanitarian crisis in the region as the advance by M23 rebels threatens to cut off Goma City and leave millions of people struggling to get food and medical help.
That was Jaron Baranga reporting. Recapping today's headlines, Hamas is demanding a complete withdrawal of Israeli troops from Gaza and ramped up humanitarian aid to pave the way for a ceasefire agreement. Heavy blizzards across western U.S. are taking a toll on the lives of millions of Americans. And senior doctors in South Korea have joined their junior colleagues in their strikes in a show of support. And that's it for this edition of The Top Story, a podcast that brings you world headlines every weekday. For more news in politics, business, sports, and culture, you can subscribe to The Beijing Hour, a one-hour podcast news magazine program. We welcome and appreciate all ratings and reviews. I'm Tian Yu. Thank you for listening.